Just if I understood it correctly, was if you receive a gift, then you don't say Shekhe'anu. Is that right?
Again?
If you receive it as a gift, you'd make Tov Meitiv rather than
Shekhe'anu. That's what he says.
So right. Well, it's too late for me now, but if I was a kid and my mother gave me a suit, then I wouldn't make Shekhe'anu, I'd make Tov Meitiv.
Well, I guess so. It's all right. If you say not, it's a Roman when you put
it on. No, but I'm saying, one should tell one's child this then.
Right. Okay. It's very nice to train children that way. Yeah. Right.
No, because I mean, I was supposed to make Shekhiana. Well, no, I mean, I was supposed to make Shekhiana because my mother never read this.
Yeah. I remember when I, many years ago, I went to the Cardinal and bought a Bukharan kippa.
Yeah.
And the man who sold to me was a Taimani.
Yeah.
And he made me say the bracha, Shachianu. It's Tetcha Desh, Tetcha Dino.
Tetcha
Desh,
very nice.
Yeah, that's also the Chadesh, Tetcha Desh.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's renew yourself. Right. This is something new.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so you learn something from him.
Maybe you got a new business.
Okay. Now we've said before, you know, that there are good news and bad news, right? Okay. And of course, we learned before that the Al-Basari is very, very smart. If you have good news, then you say Baruch Atah Ba'Meitiv, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a Soros Roos, if you have bad news, then you say Baruch Dain Hoevitz. Okay?
Right.
All right. Then the Mishnah continued right after what we had about Shekhiyonu, and it says, "Mevorech al horo'o me'ein al hatovo, the al hatovo me'ein al horo'o," which is a little bit difficult to explain, but the Gemara is going to explain it right now. What it says literally is that he makes the bracha for things that are bad, even though eventually they're going to turn out to be good, or for something good, even though eventually it turns out to be bad. Okay? So now, in other words, you make the bracha according to what the circumstances now, and not
what it may be.
What it may eventually be. Exactly. Okay? This is the idea behind it. All right. Now he gives a concrete illustration to this. Hey, Chidami. Gemara wants to know. Give me an example. So he says, Kigon de shokal bitko ba'are. Right? Let's take, for example, the case where a man has a field and all of a sudden the field gets flooded by water. So, apagav the tova he, the dide, even though it is, you know, good for him now, right? The Moscow, the Moscow arashirtam. The Shivcha, right, even though it's going to turn out to be good for him, in that the land is going as a result of it, you know, to
being flooded,
make, right, to be, as a result of being flooded, it's going also to become, you know, like muddy, and therefore, you know, eventually it will bring forth
good.
Yeah, it'll prove to be good
product.
Soil eventually, right? So, but Hashto Miha, however, right now, Rahi, that's bad for him because right now his field is flooded. And that's no great bargain right now. So that therefore, what bracha should he make? In this particular case, he should make the bracha of Baruch Dayan Ha'emes. Exactly. Because this is an evil now, even though it may turn out to be good eventually for him. And how about the opposite? The Alateva, Hechidome. So they say, for example, Kigoyin de Ashkach Mitzion. Let's take, for example, he found a something, a mitzia. Mitzia over here doesn't mean a bargain, but it means that he found something. Okay. Now, of course, a mitzia is subject to various rules. Okay? One rule that is subject to is the fact that you try, if you find something, you're supposed to advertise, you know, for the owner. Right. Of course, he has to produce simonim, as we would say. He has to be able to produce the evidence, you know, on the basis of different things, you know, that on the basis of identification, right? Marks of identification that he is actually the owner of it. And then, of course, the mitzvah is to give it back to him. If it is, however, something that you find and it cannot be traced, because it has no distinguishing characteristics whatever. I mean, let's say, for example, you find even a $5 bill, for example, on the street. The chances are that whoever dropped it is not going to come back again for it. And he can't say, this was my $5 bill, because, I mean, how does he know that it was his $5 bill as compared to somebody else? Unless he memorized the number, right. But under those circumstances, you know, it would belong to you automatically, because we say in that case, it's the case of Yish Badas. In other words, that the person who had lost it despairs of ever finding it, and because he does, then automatically you're entitled to it. Okay. But the Gemara here is talking now about the fact that here you went and you found something which was valuable, but apagav deroi didei, even though it's going to turn out bad for him. Why? The Yishama Bamalka, that if the king hears about it, or in other words, if the authorities hear about it, Shokolem Yinei, they're going to come and take it from him, because obviously the government had rules that if you found something, they were entitled to it, not you. I mean, you've heard of cases like
right.
that. Yeah, I mean, it was expropriated by the government.
Yeah,
right, right. So nevertheless, nevertheless, it's something good right now. Right at this moment, it's good. Hey, I found something. I found a great treasure. So that therefore, what is the bracha to make? Borachat olamim. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
yes. Now the Mishnah then continues and it says, all right, let's take a look again. Oyesa ishta muveres. Well, I don't have to turn back. We see okay. Oyesa ishta muveres. Let's say his wife was pregnant. The Omar. And then the man said, ishti, you know, the zohar, may it be God's will that my wife will give birth to a boy, harezu tfilashav. This is a vain prayer. In other words, it's a prayer which should not be uttered. Okay? So not the kind of a prayer that a person should say. All right. Now, the Gemara, of course, is going to go into this now. First question that they say is, well, Omahani Rachmei, tell me, doesn't prayer help? Why shouldn't a man pray? So Masav Rav Yosef, asked the following question. He says, V'yacha yolda boas, right, v'atikra shemot dino. It's told, if you remember, that Leah gave birth to six boys, okay? And then it says, and afterwards she gave birth to a daughter, okay? And she called her name Dina.
Dina, right.
So now the Gemara says, my v'yachar, why does the Torah say and afterwards? So Amar Rav, Rav said it means the Acha Shedona Leah Din Biatzma. Leah herself made the following judgment for herself, the Yomra, and she said as follows. She said, Yud Bei Shifotim Asidin Latzis Miyakev. She says, we have a tradition in our family, right, that Jacob is going to be blessed with 12 tribes, literally. In other words, 12 sons, you know, each of whom will become the progenitor of a tribe, right? So, Shisha Yotsu Mimeni, six have already come forth from me. I've already given birth to six. The Arboa Minashvachas, and also there are already four sons who were born to the handmaids, you know, to Bilhah and Zilpah, right? Each of them had two, so that's already 10 children, right? Harei Asorah. Now, Imzez Zohar, if this child is going to be a man, that is a male, right, then Lotehe Achosi Rachel Ki Achas Hashvachos, then my sister Rachel will not even be in the same category as any one of the handmaidens, because they will have had two, right? And if I have now a seventh son, that means that there's only going to be one son born
to
Rachel, right? So miyad nepcholavas. So immediately, the child was turned into a daughter as a result of Leah's prayer. Shenemar, as it is written, vatikra eshemot dino. She called her name Dino, and of course Dino, you recognize also that the idea of, you know, don Dino liatzma, that she made, you know, she came to a judgment by herself to do that. All right, so that's fine. So what is the implication? The implication obviously is that if Leah could pray and have the sex of the child change from that of a boy to a girl, right, then in that case, doesn't this prove that if you pray that it'll help. So they say, "Ein maskira ma'asei nisim." He says, "No, you don't mention miracles in order to to say that ordinary things can come to pass just as miracles. So miracles belong in a class by themselves, and don't generalize from a miracle." All right, so that knocks down that one. But there's another statement that says that maybe we can pray. The Yiboy Seymo, and if you wish, we say that Ba'sid Leo Socha Boim Yom Hava, that when did Leah take her action? It was during the first 40 days from the time that she had conceived. Kiditanya, because there is an opinion that says Shloisha Yomim Harishonim, during the first 3 days that intercourse takes place, then Yivake Shodim Rachmim Shelo Yasriach. A man should beg God that the semen should not putrefy. In other words, that the semen should be good and be helpful so that the wife can become pregnant. Mishlosha ve'ad arboim, from the third day until the 40th day, yivakesh rachamim shehei zocha. You can ask God that it should be a male. Me'arboim yom yad shlosha chadoshim, from 40 days until 3 months, yivakesh rachmim shelo yehi sandal. You should beg God that it shouldn't turn out to be a sandal. Now, sandal, of course, is like the English word sandal. But the question is, what does it mean? So the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that the sandal over here is like a flat fish. In other words, like, let's say, a member of the flounder family or something like that, right? And apparently, they noticed that there were some miscarriages where children were born, and they looked,
flat,
right? They did not have a bodily shape such as we would expect.
They didn't dilate properly.
So that, you should pray that this shouldn't happen. Mishlosha chodosh miyad shisha, from 3 months to 6 months, yivakesh rachim shelo yehei nepal. You should beg God that there should not be a miscarriage. Okay? Mishisha miyad tisha, from the 6th month to the 9th month, yivakesh rachmim sheyetze b'sholom. You should pray to God that the child should be born well, literally in peace, right? The child should have, everything should go well with the delivery, should have a healthy child. So, if that's the case, according to this latter opinion, maybe prayer would help, right? But nevertheless, as we say, the Mishnah does not approve of such a prayer. It calls it what? A tefillah shav. All right. So now they ask another kasha on this. Mimahani rachme, does prayer help in this case? The Omar Rabbi Yitzchak b'reido Rav Ami. Rabbi Yitzchak said, the son of Rav Ami said as follows. He says, when the sex of a child is determined, it's determined right at the moment of conception. But he says, Ish mazriya tehilo, if the man is the one who comes first, literally gives the seed first, then in that case, that is the keva, then she'll give birth to a girl. Isha mazras tehilo, what if the woman, has, I suppose he means like her orgasm or something like that, although that's a funny way to do it, expression says she has a seed, okay? But if she's the one, who experiences first, then in that case you'll let a zocha, then she'll give birth to a son. Now, how do we know this? Shenema, it's a posik. The posik says, Yishor ki sazriya, right? If a woman, has seed, right, or gives seed, then the older zocha, she'll give birth to a son. Of course, afterwards, then what happens, if she gives birth to a girl, and so on and so forth. Remember this parsha sazriya, the beginning of the parsha, right? But the point is that according to Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Rav Ami, he says at that particular moment, as soon as they have intercourse, at that moment already the sex of the child is going to be determined. So in that case, what are you going to pray? Don't pray that the sex should be changed or something like that.
They didn't know anything about genetics at that time.
No.
There could indeed be some truth to this. If the woman's issue is first, the woman's flow is first, it could change the alkali balance.
Alkali
balance could in turn change the...
Obviously, there was a certain amount of observation.
Right.
Yeah. The X and Y genes, that's all it matters.
Yeah, but
yeah, what, nothing to do with
but
the.
But there's some things that will make it more conducive for a Y sperm to strike.
Yeah, this
X
is true. I mean, you know, that's why they had these books that were written about how to determine the gender of your child or something like that.
Obviously, once the egg and the sperm connect, it's decided that the environment in the uterus could determine whether which sperm is more likely to connect.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that case, it could be to do with the chemical behavior of the man and the woman, and whose fluids are more influential.
Okay.
Does naphthol always mean miscarriage to mean
naphthol?
Okay.
Naphthol is any child which is, shall we say, technically aborted. I don't mean an abortion, but I mean aborted. I mean, it's a technical term. I mean, if a child doesn't come to term and, you know, it's expelled from the womb and it's not a living child, then in that particular case, I mean, this is a naphthol, okay? Yeah. In modern Hebrew, they use the term hapala.
Yeah, hapala.
Right. But even the mamaloshan used to say, "What you mopled?" I don't know if you ever heard, right? The
boy
was mopled, right? She had a miscarriage. Yeah, you know, mopil. They simply made it into a Yiddish verb, gemoppled. Yeah, mopil. Okay, mopil. She had an naphthol. Right. I mean, don't forget, according to the laws of Dikto,
Yiddish was mopled.
Yeah, so it gemoppled. Right. All right. So anyway, this little section concludes by saying, so under what circumstances then, if it's determined, you know, by whether he comes first or she comes first, so what value is there in prayer? So the answer is, So, what case are we dealing with over here where prayer could possibly help? The answer is, if they both came at the same time, then maybe prayer could help.
Like tossing it up in the air, right?
Right.
What does this literally mean, Bavat?
Bavat Achas means at the same time.
Actually, it means one of the.
Well, actually, yeah, I mean, what does it mean literally?
I mean, the expression means, you have to take the expression together. It means at one time, at the same time. Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Depends whether you talk, you know, Israeli or Mamelucian Hebrew, you know, but it's the same thing. Right.
Let me understand this again. What you're saying is that.
The Mishnah says that prayer, it would be a tefillah shot, right? It would be a prayer,
a wasted prayer.
I mean, to pray to the Rebbeinu Shlomo that may my wife give birth to a boy.
I wanted to ask him this. This is again is the environment.
I remember maybe 20 years ago there were discussions about different douches that you should use, which would enhance the possibilities of you having a son, and this was based apparently on the alkaline or the acid content of the uterus at the time. Okay, so that means there was a way where you could enhance the odds of having a son if you had this kind of douche.
That would prove to be false because the chromosomes that count. It doesn't do with douches or anything else.
Okay, the point was that the douches would make it more.
Don't make any difference if you have a certain count of chromosomes, you're going to get a boy. If you had a certain
nevertheless,
could have all the flow in the world.
But books were written by doctors in order to show that it is possible to predetermine. I mean, it's something to work it out.
They don't have the same composition of X chromosomes and Y chromosomes.
I thought the sperms had Y's or X's, and the eggs were all X's. I thought the eggs are all X's, and the sperm were either Y's or X's. I thought that's how it goes. If you get two X's, then it's a girl. If you get an X and a Y, it's a boy.
Correct.
The girl, by definition, the female always produces X's. Always produces the egg. X. All the eggs are X's. The sperm is either an X and a Y. The sperm is either X and Y. So what they would try to do is to get a Y sperm to fertilize the egg. And in certain situations, the Y sperm, which travel differently from the X sperm, they tried to influence the environment in the uterus so that the Y sperm would be able to move faster or more accurately, or something like that. So it's possible if the what was going, and I didn't follow it through. I mean, I don't know what the current state of the standing is, but in those days, if you have an alkali douche, then it's more likely that the Y sperm would win the race. If there is scientific data to prove that, then if the woman's flow would affect the environment in the uterus in a certain way, then it might indeed enhance the likelihood of the Y sperm going first. It's from 20 years ago. It's just something that stuck in my head. So I don't know whether I'm remembering it accurately, but that was my understanding of it, and the understanding of it still seems to make sense.
I remember something along the same lines.
We'll get a gynecologist in or a geneticist.
You can go to the library, look up determining the sex of your child. I'm sure that stuff will be...
Still have the books. It's possible.
People might still be researching it. I mean, people could make millions of dollars from it.
Absolutely.
So people are probably still researching it.
Okay, getting back over here to our text, all right? Now, the Mishnah, what is left out over here is a discussion on something that I'm surprised that there was no discussion. Because just before, Hoysa Yishtanu Beres, the Mishnah says, Hatzorik L'Shevavar, if you pray for something that's already happened, Harezu Tfilah Shav, it's not going to help you. In that case, it's a wasted prayer. All right, and then you see then about, for example, his wife is pregnant and so on, so that logically we could see that it follows upon it because of the fact that if the wife is pregnant, so what are you going to pray, that God should change the gender of the child?
Yeah.
That has already been determined, as we see it was determined at the time of birth.
That's where the famous saying is that if you see a fire engine, that you shouldn't pray that your house is on fire because it's already in the past. If it's on fire, it's on fire.
So you have to pray that the damage is minimal.
Right.
Or minimized.
That's
if it is
your
fault.
All right. Let me continue with the mission over here. All right. Because here is along the lines of what you were saying, David. Okay. The next thing says over there, Hoya bo badera. If a man was traveling, right? Vishoma kol tzvocha be'ir. And then as he came to the city, he hears that there's a terrible uproar in the city. The Omer, and he says, Yirotzen shalot ahei b'soch b'si, may be God's will that it not be in my own home, right? Harezu tefillah shav. This is also a tefillah shav.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then the Mishnah continues and says, Anichnas l'krach, somebody enters a great big city, mispalel shtayim, then he has to make two brachas, achas b'knisoso v'achas b'tziyoso. He has to make one bracha when he comes into the town and another bracha as he leaves the town. And benazai omer, benazai said, he has to make arba, he has to make four brachas, shtayim b'knisoso, right, two when he comes into the town, shtayim b'tziyoso, and two when he leaves the town. And what is the nature of the two brachas? No sein hoidor al shevabar, v'tzoek al ha'osid.
He's reading the Mishnah from the beginning of the chapter.
Right.
Okay.
It's on Nun Dalet where we have the Mishnah, because that are
that's
going to be discussed over here.
Go ahead.
As you see, what they're doing is taking the Mishnah, taking it phrase by phrase, and analyzing it. Okay?
So what is the reason for the difference between the one bracha, the two brachas, and the four brachas?
According to Ben Azai, you have to have the following. You have to have no sein hedor al shevabar. You have to give thanks to God for what has already taken place. V'tzoek al ha'osid, and you have to make another bracha praying to God for the future that he should take care of you. So, if you go, then, according to the original part, the first part of the Mishnah, all it says is that when you come in you do it and when you leave you do it, right? But then as I says, when you come in you should give thanks to God for what he has done so far to protect you and that he may continue to protect you, and then when you leave you thank God for having protected you and that he should continue to protect you. And of course, the halacha follows Benazai in this particular case, as we'll see. But what actually is the nusach of the brachas? So this is what we're going to see. Okay. So the Gemara, first of all, tells us a story about Hillel. Tanu Rabbanan, sages taught. Ma'asa b'Hillel Hazaken. This is a story about the elder Hillel. Why the elder Hillel? Because he was the first Hillel. But subsequently, he had Einiklich and Ur Einiklich and so on, who also bore the name Hillel. And because of that,
but
so the original one is Hillel Hazaken, right? The elder Hillel, right?
This is an ancestor of the guy with Hillel and Shammai, or is
this this is the Hillel.
I mean, he might have been the first one. Right. I mean, his father might have been Hillel or something.
Well,
okay, that's
probably was.
Yeah, well,
all right. Shehoya Baba Derech, he was on the road. The Shammai called Tzvacha Beir, and he heard the sound, you know, of an uproar in the city. Omar, so he said, Muftach ani she'ein zeh b'sof beisi. Says, I am positive. I have faith that this is not happening inside my own home. The Olav HaKosev Omer, and concerning this, the Pasuk says, Mishmua ro'a lo yira, nochon libo botuach bashem. It's a Pasuk in Tehillim, which says that he will not be afraid of any evil tiding, right? His heart is firm, and he trusts in God. So Omer Rava, Rava said, "Kol heichid the rashta lahaykra, mereisha l'seife, madrash b'seife l'reisha." It says you're giving a drash. In other words, you're interpreting this pasuk. You can interpret this pasuk from the first part to the second part, or you can also do it from the second part to the first part. If you start in with the first clause in that, right, then in that case it's Mishmua ro lo yira. He is not afraid of any evil tiding. Matam, for what reason is he not afraid? Because nochon libo b'tuach bad Hashem, right? His heart is steadfast and he trusts in God. Misefe l'reishe madrish. On the other hand, you could do it the other way around. You could say nochon libo b'tuach bad Hashem. A person who is steadfast in his heart and has faith in God, then mishmu aro lo yira, then he will not have to be afraid of any evil tidings. All right, that's right. Yeah. Ahu Talmido, there was a certain Talmid, the Havakos of Basre, the Rabbi Yishmael, the Rabbi Yosef. He was following his master, his teacher, right, who was Rabbi Yishmael, son of Rabbi Yosef. And where was he following? It was Bishuk of the Tzion, in the marketplace in Tzion. So Chazir de Kol Matchi. So Rabbi Yishmael noticed that his student was afraid. You know, like going into the Arab Shuk Lahafil, you know. Notice that he was afraid.
What's the word? What's the word?
Mafchid. Pachad, you know, pachad. It's an Aramaic form of the word pachad, okay? Of course, in Hebrew, mafchid means that you frighten somebody else. But this is Aramaic, and here, in Arabic, you can take it as an intransitive verb. I mean, that he himself was frightened. Okay? So he saw that his student was frightened. Omalei, so Rabbi Shmuel said to him, Hatoah, you're a sinner, he says. Dichsiv, because it's a pasuk that says, it happens to be a pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, Pochadu b'tzion chatoyim, that the sinners have fear in Zion. So if he noticed that here he was, Beshuk of the Tzion, right? In the marketplace in Zion, and he was afraid, then it must be because he was a sinner. So Omalei, so the student said to him, but look, the Hoksif, is there a pasuk that says, Ashrei Odom Mefachei Tomid, happy is the man who always has fear? So Omalei, so Rishbel said to him, Ahu B'divei Torah Ksiv. He says, no, that applies only to words of Torah. In what way? If you're afraid that you're liable to forget, then you make extra effort in order to remember what you've learned. Okay? Yehuda bar Noson have a shokil, the ozil bar. Ah. And then he started to sigh. So, Omalei, Yisurim Boy, Ahu Gavra La Suya Napshe, he says, what's the matter with you? You need Tzoris, you need sighs, you need troubles, I mean, that you're trying to bring upon yourself. Dichsiv, there's a pasuk that says, Ki pochad pochadati vayesoni, vayesha yogoti yoveli. It says, you know, I was afraid, and exactly because I was afraid, it happened to me. And that which I feared, it says, this came unto me. Where? So in other words, it's a pasuk in the Yov, which says that, in the book of Job. Right. Says, you know, I fear the fear, literally, and it came. I was afraid, and the talk had happened to me. Right.
Nothing could fear but
right.
Itself.
Right. So, again, what did the student answer him? He said, Ashrei Yov Mefachet Tomid. Doesn't the Pasuk of Mishlei say that a man should always be afraid? So, again, he says, Hatu B'Divrei Torah Ksiv. Well, this, he says, applies only that the Divrei Torah have already explained. But otherwise, your disposition should not be that you're always oikening, you're sighing, and always right, you're afraid every minute, this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and so on and so forth. You have to have, you know, a little bit emunah, betochen, you have to be nochen libay, that your heart has to be steadfast, you have to be batuach for Hashem, you have to have faith in God.
Nightmare?
Yes. Whatever it would be, siyut laila.
Siyut
laila.
What does that mean literally?
It means literally a fear that you have in the night.
Oh, just a fear in the night.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. Does not mean a horse that you see at night.
So are we stopping here?
We'll stop over here, right.
So we're...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So now we're on Samach.
Samach.
Two-thirds of the way down over here.
Amud Aleph.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
All right, we're going to have a whole series of brachas now that we will discuss. And many of them, of course, are part of the davening that we do every day.
Well, that'd be interesting.
And we'll see what is the origin, for what reason do we make these various brachas. Okay?
Good.
All right, so Wednesday night, same time, same place.
Samach,
Amud Aleph. We are approximately two-thirds of the way down.
Okay.
And the next part of the Mishnah that is going to be discussed was the brachas that you make when you enter into a big city. Nichtos the Krach. Okay? Samach, Amud Aleph.
Amud Aleph.
Omed Aleph, remember that each Daf in the Gemara has an Omed. One side is called Omed Aleph, and the other side is called Omed Beis. And of course, Aleph always comes before Beis.
Only on November 10th. Yeah,
right.
Any other time it may come.
We're about two-thirds of the way down. The Mishnah that we're commenting on now is, excuse me if my voice holds out, Hanichtos the Krach. If a person goes into a capital city or a major city or something like that. Krach is the Hebrew expression that's used in time the Talmud for a metropolis, so to speak. Okay?
Okay, I know what I see it.
So yeah. Right. So we have a bracha before you go in, the bracha as you leave. Or, as we saw, I think it was Ben Azra or Ben Zoma who said that we should make two brachas. One, two brachas as you go in, two brachas as you leave.
I'm at base.
Yeah, right.
And then the other one also said.
No.
Huh?
No, this is for going into the city.
Oh, the city.
Right.
Big city, you're going to a big city.
Karach, right. So what is the big problem, as we'll see from the Gemara in just a couple of minutes? Problem is crime in the city.
Oh, boy.
Something like we have today.
Right, right. And the question is whether you have a government ruling the city that protects the average citizen or it does not protect the citizen. Okay? So why do we have to make the bracha? Obviously, because of the fact that entering the city, it could be a place of danger. Exactly. So that's the idea behind the bracha. Okay? All right. So, Kant Rabban. Now they quote a Baraisa, which says, Bichnisa so, mahu omer. When he enters the city, what is the bracha that he makes? So he has to say the following bracha, or following prayer. It's not really a bracha, it's a prayer. Yehi ratzon milfanecho ad Hashem elokai, May it be your will, O Lord our my God, that you should enable me to enter this great city in peace, right? And then Nichnas, after he has already entered the city, Omer, then he says the following bracha: I give thanks unto you, O Lord my God, that you have enabled me to enter the city in peace. Okay? So as we see, this follows the opinion of Ben Azai, who said that when you come in, you have to make two brachas, and then when you're ready to leave, you again make two, as I said, really it's not brachas, that's tefillahs, two tefillahs.
Well, he's anticipating that he's going to come into the
right.
city in peace.
Right.
He doesn't know that he's going to make it in
right.
peace.
Since he got along in the city in peace, so he's grateful for that. Now, Bikesh Lotes, when he wants to leave the city, Omer, then he says the following, right, may it be thy will, Lord my God, God my fathers, Shetotzieni Mikrat Tzele Shalom, that you should enable me to leave this city in peace, right? And then Yotza, once he's left it, Omer, Modani Upanecho, Arishem Lekai, Shetotzieni Mikrat Tzele, right, Lishalom. I give thanks unto you that you have enabled me to leave this big city in peace. Ukashem, and likewise, just as Shehotzei Sonu L'Shalom, that you enabled me to leave in peace, Kach to the Chenu L'Shalom. So likewise, may you lead me in peace, this is the Chenu L'Shalom, and may you give me support in peace, B'Satzi Deni L'Shalom, and enable me to walk in peace, B'Satzi Leni, and may you save me, Mikaf Kol Oyev Orei Bader, from the hand of any enemy and whoever is lurking in wait on the road. Omar Rav Matna, so Rav Masa says, Leishna, when do we learn that you should make such a prayer? Ela Bekrach She'ein Donin Gehorgen Bo. This is in a city where they do not have any justice, right? They don't literally judge. There's no justice over there. And they murder people over there. Abol Bekrach, if you go into a city, Shadonin Behorgen, though, where, you know, they do commit, where the judges judge, and the Horgen Bo, over here I have to understand that the word Behorgen Bo means that the authorities punish with death people, you know, who commit capital crimes, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. So I have to interpret it that way.
What does the word mean anyway?
Horeg means to kill.
Harganin. Harganin. Oh, is that where it came from? Harganin.
Well,
how about
the Yiddish word is from the Hebrew root, which means to kill, to murder, right?
Harganin.
Okay, yes. So I have to assume that not really what he means by donning the Horgen bow is, you know, the fact that the judges judge and they can condemn to death anybody, you know, who commits a capital crime over there. And therefore, presumably, there is the fear of justice and of the authorities among the people, and the people that are peaceful. Then in that case, less lumbo. Then it's not necessary to make this prayer. Okay? Now, I don't know how New York qualifies. Is it a peaceful city, or is it a city where justice is not being pursued, or something like that?
Consider the issue of a capital punishment. Issue,
yeah.
You know, which is the big debate here.
Correct. All right. I have to add in that connection. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, of course, based upon different verses that they have in the Bible, they do say that, you know, there are times when the Sanhedrin has to condemn a person to death. For various reasons. I mean, he committed this crime or that crime. There are different types of crimes that are capital offenses, okay? And therefore, they have what we call the Arba Misos Bezdin. In other words, the four different types of execution, each one for a different type of a violation. You know, there's, for example, Skila, which is stoning to death, Srefa, where they put hot melted lead down the throat in order to kill that person. That's right. That literally means fire. But that was the form of punishment. Hereg, this is where you know they would take the executioner's axe, let's say, and
behead somebody,
behead or kill him or something. It's either with a sword or with an axe or something like that. And then chenek, this is strangulation. Okay.
Hanging.
Well, no,
string. Actually, right. They didn't exactly hang a person the way we did. I mean, if you read the Gemara and Sanhedrin, the Mishnah and the Gemara, you see that by strangulation, what they would have is two guys, let's say the two witnesses who came to testify that this person was guilty of something, that, you know, they, let's say each of them would have a cord.
Right, yeah.
And they would pull from different directions until the person was strangled. Okay,
but did the Sanhedrin ever do that?
So now you have the next question. Granted that the Sanhedrin had this authority to put people to death, but did they ever exercise it? And the answer is extremely rarely. Why? Because first of all, the laws of evidence are such that you have to have witnesses who are exact in their testimony. They have to say not only the fact that they observed, that in itself is not enough for capital punishment, but having observed, they also warned the person that if he didn't cease and desist from what he was going to do, then he was going to suffer the death penalty. If they didn't warn him, then in that case, again, you cannot inflict a death penalty, okay?
But what about the case of a confession?
You can't confess.
You cannot confess against yourself. I mean, you can confess to ease your own conscience, and as a matter of fact, the Gemara says, you know, that a person who is being led to death, he should confess his sins.
But you can't testify against
yourself.
But
you cannot testify against yourself. There's a principle in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, Ein odem meis misatz ben rasha, which means a man cannot make himself into a wicked person. He cannot testify against himself.
That leads to interesting situations,
right,
where someone said, he lent me money at interest. He's wrong for lending money at interest, but I can't testify against myself, so the testimony is split there. The testimony can't be.
Well, sometimes, in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the question of what we call palginin debura, which means literally you can split the statement, right, and take half of the statement for this and half the same for that. I'm not getting into the technicalities. But the result is that the Gemara in Marcus, for example, which follows Sanhedrin, says that if a Bezdin actually put a person to death, they were called the Bezdin Katlani. In other words, it's the Bezdin of the murderers, because people simply were not put to death, even though they had theoretically the judicial power to do so, but they didn't do it. However, you also have to bear in mind that the Jews were also not living necessarily under their own authority. In other words, for a good part, for centuries, right?
In Babylon.
Right. Whether, not just in Babylonia, but even in Eretz Yisrael itself. I'm talking about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was under the authority of the Romans, let's say, all right, for centuries. Now, in such cases, the Roman authorities could exact their own system of justice and their own system of punishment. All right, we're told, for example, that in case of civil disputes, don't go to the Goyish courts. Settle the civil disputes before a Jewish president, okay? But obviously, if there was a capital case involved, then the Roman government could also step in, and you know, with their system, they killed people for any infringement, without any questions, you see, without any hesitation.
So that would have been
right. And of course, in Babylonia, it was quite possible too that the Persian authorities over there did exactly the same thing, because don't forget, Babylonia at this time was part of the Persian Empire. And so the Babylonians, so that the Jews living over there were subject not only to Jewish law, but they were also subject to the law of the Persians. So in that case, this is what I think, that when it says, Donin v'Horgin, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's referring to the Jewish authorities. I mean, it's my own Kiddush. I don't know if others are in agreement with me. But I feel that what they're talking about over here is actually the government authorities who do have the right, you know, to enforce good behavior by their system of courts and by the execution of those people who transgress it. Yeah. So where there is the fear of the authorities and justice is being carried out, you don't have to do it because they're presumably going to be safe. But in a city which lacks law and order, so to speak, then in this case the prayers are appropriate both as you come in, about to come in, you enter, and then as you are leaving and when you have left in peace. Okay.
So they were complicated prayers.
Yeah, right. So anyway, Omer Rav Nosma, so Matanur again says, he says, Apila Bikrach Shed Omer Horgenbo, look, sometimes you can come into a big city where justice is being carried out and where punishment is being exacted, but Zimnin, there are times, the Lo Misramele Inish to Yalaflei Zuchusa. It's possible that a person will not find anyone who will be able to be Malamit Zuchus for him. In other words, he is accused of doing something, right? He's arrested by the authorities, and it's possible that there won't be any corroborating witness, you know, to testify the fact that, hey, this man is innocent, he's not the one to do it. And so therefore, since the possibility of danger is always there, that's why, according to Rav Masna, you should say this in any case, whether it is a place of law and order or whether it is a lawless place. This is his opinion. Tona Rabbanan. Now, in line with this, they now have another prayer upon entering some place. This time it is the Beis HaMeretz, the public bath. Okay? Now, again, in order to understand this, we have to understand something about the Roman bathhouses. The Roman bathhouses were pretty marvelous places from an architectural point of view, from an engineering point of view. They had all kinds of baths. There was the cold bath, they had the hot bath, they had the lukewarm, the tepid, that they called the tepidarium, and so on, right? Oh. And how did they heat it? So the answer is that underneath the floor, they burned fires. There was a big furnace, and they burned fires over there, and that heated the floor so that you can walk around, you know, and knock it and bovis over there, and you know, and not feel the cold. And likewise, the water was heated, and so on. But it was possible that sometimes an accident could occur. And if an accident would occur, let's say such as the floor fell in, which is the Gemara is what it's going to bring, then in that case you can fall into the fire underneath it. So that therefore they have this special prayer as you enter the Beis HaMeretz. Okay, I don't know whether this would apply to the Baden Spitzbad or not.
No, I'm sure.
Probably not, because they don't build it exactly in the same style that they used to build the old Roman bath. Okay. But you know, there's some of the marvels actually of the Roman civilization that have survived. There's the baths of Caracalla, for example, in Rome. Huge place, and, you know, very elaborate, with all kinds of statuary and everything else. And speaking about that, it's Gemara that speaks about the fact that it's probably Gamliel, if I'm not mistaken, that they asked him, how could he justify his going into the bathhouse for a schwitz and a bath, you know, a hot bath? After all, there is a statue of Aphrodite over there. So he says, so what if there's a statue of Aphrodite? Am I worshipping Aphrodite when I have a hot bath? People go and they urinate over there. So it's not a religious, doesn't have religious significance.
What then, should he go without a bath?
Right. Okay. Okay, well, of course he could have said he should have gone to the mikveh instead.
Well, mikvah's really not a bath.
Yeah, the mikvah, that's right. The mikvah's not a bath, exactly. Okay. And obviously, you know, there are times when you like a good schwitz or...
People shouldn't use the mikvah as a bath.
Yeah. It feels good, you know, for the bainer, you know, when you have a nice good bath or something like that. So obviously, it was a very popular place. Okay. To continue. So what is the prayer that you should say as you enter the Beis HaMerchot? Omer, he says, Yehi Ratzon Milfanecha, Ad Hashem Elokai, right, may it be thy will, O Lord my gosh, et Hatzileini Mizeh, that you should save me from this. And for anything else that's liable to happen. V'al Ye'ora Bi Devar Kalkola, let no Devar Kalkola, in other words, any mishap happen to me, the Oven of any sin, V'im Ye'ora Bi Devar Kalkola V'Oven, and if by any chance some mishap or sin should happen to me, then Tehei Misasi Kapora Cholonisai, then may my death be a Kapora for all my sins, may bring atonement for all my sins. Now, of course, because what is he anticipating? That if the floor falls and he falls into it, so, you know, he's going to die as a result of it. So that therefore he prays that may my death be a kapara for all my sins. So, at this particular point of Rabbi says, Lo lema in Ishochi, says a person should not say this. Why? The lo liftach pume lesotam, because you should not open your mouth to Satan. This is a popular expression on Yiptach Pe L'Sotan, okay, which means that if you say it shouldn't happen and you say something bad, then in reality you're sort of anticipating that the bad is going to happen to you. And so therefore don't say something. I mean, don't say, you know, may my death be a kapara for my sins, because what are you saying? You're saying, who knows? There's a good chance I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And in that case, you're opening your mouth to say. The Yomar Reish Lakish, as Reish Lakish said, V'chein Tad L'Mishmei Rabbi Yossi, and likewise we have a tradition in the name of Rabbi Yossi, that L'Yoylam Ha'Yivtach Odem Piyiv L'Sotim, that a man should not open up his mouth, should not, in other words, utter some expression, permit Satan to bring about precisely the evil or the catastrophe that he had prayed against. Omar Rabbi Yosef said, Mikra, where do we find the Pasuk in the Torah which brings out this idea? Yichsiv, it's written, and this is the book of Yeshayahu, right in the very first chapter, it says, Kimat Kizdom Hoyinu La'amora Dominu.
Kimat is also a Jewish word.
Yeah, right. Almost.
Right.
Exactly what it means in that pasuk, it might mean maybe just a little bit or something like that, but it's come, but the way they teach it, it's the way that we understand it in Yiddish today, all right? Almost, we have become almost like Sodom, right? And we have almost become similar to Gomorrah, Sodom and Gomorrah, okay? He was talking, Yeshayo over there talks about, you know, the people of Israel, that if you know, they persist in their evils and their sins, right? Then we have become almost like a Sodom and a Gomorrah. And then, Ma'alilahu, Novi, and then what does the prophet then continue to say? He says, Shimu Devar Hashem, hear, O the word of the Lord, Ketzine Sodom, right? O ye who are the official dome of Sodom, and so on. In other words, once he started in by saying, you know, we have almost become like Sodom and Gomorrah, so the next thing, what does he do? He says, yes, our leadership are the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. So in other words, Yeshayahu, by the way, is criticized in this first chapter for the fact, I mean, the rabbis criticize him, and they say that he said bad things about the people of Israel. Now, we know that prophets in general, you know, very often they had things to say, you know, to try to rebuke the people and get them on the right path and so on. But by saying something right where he compared them to the worst elements, to Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, which God had destroyed, he was like a Paseh Pelot of them, right? Also, he says, in the same first chapter at the beginning, several verses before, God wants to make Yeshayahu his prophet, okay? And what does Yeshayahu say, protesting? He didn't want to do it. He says, Ish temeis tefosayim anochi, I am a person who am unclean in lips, but the soul come to meis tefosayim anochi yoshev, and in the midst of a people who are unclean in lips, do I dwell? So they said to him, what are you trying to do? Fashmutzen the people? The expression that they use is delatoria, which is from the Latin word delato. Delato is somebody who squealed, who denounced, you know, who squealed to the authorities in order to bring somebody into, you know, to harm somebody, okay? So why are you saying these terrible things about the people of Israel? You could have the right to say something about yourself, but why blame the people of Israel? Maybe they don't deserve the things. So we have therefore that the same chapter then as we see over here, that they say that there's a case like opening up the mouth for Satan. Kinopik, now when he leaves the Beis HaMerchatz, right, and he leaves it in peace, Mayomer, then what should he say? Omer Rabacha, so Rabacha says he should say, Modani Lefanecha Hashem Elokai, I give thanks unto you, O Lord my God, Shehitzaltani Min Ho'or, that you saved me from the fire, literally from the light, but here it means from the fire, saved me from the fire. Rabbi Bohu, and now they tell the story of what happened in the bathhouse, okay? And that's why we know that it could possibly be a place of sakona, a place of danger. Rabbi Bohu Olivei Bani, he went into the bathhouse. I don't know whether the word Bani over here is connected to the word Bani or not. Haven't figured out that one as yet.
Well, that's what the Yiddish word is, Bani,
right.
For bath.
Right, yeah. So at any rate, he went into the bathhouse. Ifris Beibana Betuse, and then what happened? All of a sudden, the bathhouse crumbled from underneath him. It's Rachish Leidni, so a miracle happened for him. Komel Amuda, he was able to get up on one of the pillars, you know, upon which he was resting. Shaziv, and he also saved Meo Bechad Gavre Bechad Avari. He was able to save 101 men, literally, or people, by one arm. This is how strong, because it's a miracle, so he's able with one arm to grab hold of the pillar, and with the other one, he was able to grab hold of 101 people. Maybe they all held each other or something, but he was strong enough to hold all of them.
Time, yeah.
Right?
Maybe one of them pulled them out one
right,
at a time.
Right, right. Yeah. At any rate, he saved all of them. Okay. Right. Omar, and he said, Hainu the Ravacha. It says, this is, again, in accordance with what Ravacha had said, the Omar Ravacha, because Ravacha said in connection, you know, with prayers to say, when you go into places of danger, Hanichdas, the haki is dumb, what if you go to have your blood let? You know, in those days, what did they do? They had leeches, or they would actually take knives and, you know, cut a vein and then let the blood flow. This was medicine, the way it was practiced.
But you weren't allowed to do that
according to
Allah of Arden.
Pardon me?
You're not allowed to do that.
Not allowed. For medicinal purposes, it might be permissible, but only if, you know exactly what you're doing. But obviously, there's danger involved in it. So this is why Rabacha said that if you're going to have your blood let, so Omer, then you have to say the following prayer. May it be thy will, O Lord my God, that this business that I'm about to engage in should be for a refuah for me.
Yes.
So nowadays, if you're going to undergo surgery, this would be an appropriate one.
It would be an appropriate one, absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah. And v'sir po'eni, and may you heal me. Because you are God, a faithful healer. And not only that, but your healing is true.